You are listening to WPVMLP in Asheville, North Carolina. 103.7 on the dial, heard globally on WPVMFM.org and on Alexa. Just tell Alexa to play WPVM Radio.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Partly sunny across western North Carolina today. Showers and thunderstorms becoming likely late this afternoon into the evening hours. Some storms could be strong to severe, or high today near 87 here in the city. The low tonight going down to 67. Showers and thunderstorms likely on Saturday. Still that threat for strong to severe storms with a high near 83. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio. I'm your host, James Nave. Let's see where this conversation takes us today. I'm going solo once again. I've started to really enjoy these explorations that I've been doing. I do not prepare for this. I sit down in front of my microphone, my Hollyland mic. It's a little wireless mic. And wherever I am in the world, I start recording. And I let the thought beats take me where they want me to go. I'm recording this in Arroyo Seco, New Mexico, looking out onto a little bit of a hazy day. There's some fires around the state, so the fire smoke drifts on the clouds, drifts on the air, and settles about in the valley. It's around 10:30 when I'm starting this recording. The day is starting to heat up. Marley and Luna, the dogs that I often dog sit for, are nearby, and a few outdoor bugs are doing the outdoor bug summer thing. Last week on this show, I spent most of the time talking about how to find value in performing and memorizing poems, how you can take a verse, 3 or 4 lines, and spend an entire day just thinking about 1 or 2 lines. And we also talked about the experiences that we have throughout our lives. Many of them you file away in a don't-know room and you don't remember it anymore. And then it pops up in a dream or maybe in a conversation, or maybe you're trying to think of something and it seems like it comes out of nowhere, but it's actually coming out of one of those don't-know rooms. Boom, there it is. Oh, I didn't know I knew that. And if you learn to trust that even the things you don't quite remember are there and will pop up, you can play with them. You pay attention to them and they will deepen. Your narrative will emerge, and with the narrative comes agency, followed by authenticity, then voice expands, and things get a little bit easier because your confidence is there. So these are some of the things that we looked at last week. This week, what I would like to do is take a more comprehensive look at what we call improvisation. And the reason why I'm interested in this subject is because I've noticed how much people tend to elevate the notion of the improv. Now, admittedly, when you're on stage and you're given a subject and you have to improv instantly, that's a skill-based thing, something that one practices over a period of time until it becomes easier and easier and the flow happens without too much trouble. I'm going to include that in this work today, but I'm also going to expand this idea of improvisation to include all of us. You listening right now, you may think, I could never stand up in front of a group of people, take a topic, and make something of it verbally. Well, that's probably not true. What is true, you were thinking, I couldn't stand up today and take a topic, a cold topic, and make something out of it today. That's probably true. If you've never done it before, it's a bit intimidating. I remember when I was a student years ago at Brevard Junior College in Brevard, North Carolina. This was 1970. God, can you believe it? I signed up for a speech and presentation class, a public speaking class. I remember it was held after lunch. It was a bit unruly. I liked it because it seemed somewhat free form. The teacher was more interested in process than testing, and I wasn't a great student, so I loved the idea of the process. So I remember we had our little books, and everybody would practice their talks. So there was the table talk, which you'll see in Toastmasters. So the table talk is a topic, and then you pick a topic and you have 2 minutes to talk on it. So the teacher that day was going to give us some version of the table talk, I think. Now, we had done other things as well. We had written speeches. We had taken them apart. I stumbled along. I was, you know, the guy in the back room, not quite sure what to do. So this day, she required all of us to stand up. She called it the impromptu speech. So she gave me a topic, and I don't remember what the topic is, but oh my gosh. I looked at the topic. My mouth went dry. I looked out at the class. There couldn't have been more than 12, 15 people in the class, if that. And I absolutely had no idea what to say. I was completely befuddled. I don't remember if I got a good grade in that class or not. I probably didn't. And it wasn't the teacher's fault. That said, maybe a little bit, because I wasn't quite prepped for it. Actually, I was being asked to do something that if you've never done, it's kind of hard. Like I said, you might feel that way too. But I stepped up and I tried. So that was my first full memory of standing in front of a group of people, failing abysmally, just a terrible failure all the way around. And I sat down, and I would like to say maybe the next person or the person after that, I don't remember, stepped up and did a brilliant improv or impromptu talk on whatever the subject was. Of course, what I misunderstood way back then was how much you have to relax into these situations in order to allow the emptiness, the silence, the lack of awareness, the lack of knowledge, to just be there and let people, if you are in front of an audience, let people look at you while you make your way through the silence to whatever happens to be on the other side. Here's a little performance tip. I was down in Santa Fe this past weekend over the 4th of July at a friend's house. His name's David, and David and Deborah hosted an afternoon party. Very nice house, had a stage, had some musicians. And so Deborah invited me up to do something because she knew I was a bit of a spoken word person. So I had given it some thought, and there was a poem that I performed years ago for school students called Casey at the Bat by Ernest Lawrence Thayer. Now, I imagine over the years, I have performed that poem 1,000 times. That said, a week or so ago, I decided, well, I'll try to learn or relearn Casey at the Bat. So I did. I got it down. The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a pall-like silence fell upon the patrons of the game. So if you know Casey at the Bat, basically you know Casey's a study in hubris. He thinks he's the greatest player on earth. The team that he's opposing cannot beat the Mudville team, which is his team. And it's down to the last strike, the last inning. What is it? The last inning, you know, the bases have two players on them, two runners on them. And all Casey has to do is hit a home run, which he usually does. And the three runs come in, they win the game by 1 point. But Casey, full of hubris, decides he's going to let the first ball go by, and he says, well, that ain't my style. And then he ignores the second ball. The umpire says, strike two, and the crowd goes wild and say, fraud, fraud, and everybody's a big brouhaha. And then Casey calms him down. His muscles strain, and then the pitcher throws the pitch, and Casey swings the bat as hard as he can, and he misses. And the last part of the poem goes like this. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere men are laughing and little children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out. So Casey at the Bat is a poem about hubris, overplaying it, confidence that comes with a little bit of just boneheaded arrogance and all of the rest, none of which actually worked to your advantage because obviously Casey lost the game for the whole team. point is, I was at David and Deborah's house, and Deborah asked me to come up, and I had been running the show, running this poem, Casey, for a number of times, and I thought I had the thing. So I stepped up on the stage and started in, and I was about a quarter of the way through, maybe 30% through, and the whole thing just went blank. So instead of me panicking, I just said, well, sorry, folks, I forgot it. Now, the reason I bring this up and the reason I tie this into the improvisational nature of things, I was not really improvising Casey at the Bat on one level because I have it memorized. But on another level, even the memorized material becomes improvisational because you never know what will happen next. And in fact, it's impossible to know what's going to happen next. Nobody's been there before. The future is always right now, and then the now becomes the past. So the whole thing actually is an improvisational situation. And what we have done in our Americana culture, probably Western European culture as well, I'm not so sure about the other cultures. I haven't experienced them like I have the American culture. What we've done here in the American culture, especially in the artistic circles, we value greatly the ability to improv. Now, I think it may come from something Americans generally have, which is this sense of individualism. So if you can think on your feet, move fast, and be really clever with your verbiage, like I'm moving fast now. I don't know how clever I am, but I'm definitely moving fast and I'm trusting what comes up. So in a sense, you would call this an improvisation. What I'm actually doing is having a conversation, no different than a conversation I would be having at a coffee shop with a friend or somebody that I bumped into in the parking lot, hadn't seen in a while. We struck up a conversation. How are you doing? And then off I go into my story, which is all pure, pure improv. I'm submitting that everything that we do in our lives, from the moment we rise out of the night's sleep until the moment we go back to bed and fall into the next night's sleep, it's all improvisational because you just don't know what's going to happen next. And there's a real beauty in that. And if you notice, as you live your life, you have great skill in doing those things that you don't expect. Even if somebody's done the same redundant thing every day, and even if you have a routine, it's set. The bee might fly in the window. The wind might blow the window open. The glass might tumble from the shelf. You might stub your toe, or you might drop something, and when you lean over to pick it up, you might bump your head, or you might lean over to pick it up, and you had thought you had lost that dollar bill, and there it is underneath the table. All of these spontaneous things happen all the time. Now, where we can go with this, let's go to a question. The question is, how can you take it full advantage of this great improvisational benefit that you were born with and that you've had all of your life? You know what to do most of the time. Now, here comes the crux. Here's the quote-unquote problem. You freeze up some of the times. I freeze up some of the times. I just don't know what to do. My improvisational chops that I've had since I was a little baby crying to the sky just seemed to go away, frozen like some statue on a cold winter's day, wrapped in ice. You can see it. Ooh, the wind blowing. And there the poor statue stands. Maybe a blackbird perches on it and flies away. But you're stiff. You're frozen for a moment. This is what we can continue to explore now. How do you loosen yourself up? How do you get yourself into those moments when you flow, even when the stakes go up, even when the stress rises, even when the tire goes flat, the shelf breaks, Humpty Dumpty falls off the wall and crashes onto the floor, and you hope for the king's men to come by, but then you realize, no, I got to put Humpty back together again, and if I don't, I have to put something else back together again. How do you deal with that improvisationally, and how can you practice it? Let's take a look at that. There are a lot of phrases people use in place of improvisation to describe what they do throughout the day. Thinking on your feet is one. How many times has somebody said to you, come on, think fast, don't fool around, let's get going? That's another way of saying improv the moment. I've often heard people say, be in the now. Of course, when you think about it, the now is all we have, so you always are in the now. It's really more about being aware of it. But I always want to say when somebody says, be in the now, I want to say, well, I am in the now. Now what do I do? Well, whatever it is, it will have not been done before, because the now moves on and becomes another now and then another now, and the future always awaits just beyond the next now. Go, 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 said the bird. Humankind cannot bear very much reality. Time past and time future, what might have been and what has been, point to one end, which is always present. That was a little bit of T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets, which he opens by saying, time present and time past are both perhaps present in time future, and time future contained in time past. Let's go over that one more time. Time present and time past are both perhaps present in time future, and time future contained in time past. And then Eliot goes on to say, if all time is eternally present, all time is unredeemable. Eliot, I think, is suggesting that time, as we use it as a measure, may not exist. We can't redeem time. We seem to spend it, or at least we live within the context of its passing relative to our lifespan. But time as we know it, move it away from the human construction, and it shifts dramatically. So that brings us back to now, the moment of the improv, and then what comes next, which is always unknown. Unredeemable time. You can redeem money, and you can get a dozen eggs from the grocery store. You can redeem possessions and trade them for something else. But you can't redeem time. What you can do is respond in time, in the moments of measure that we have created, in the improvisational nature that naturally exists around us, because there's no other choice than to have it exist improvisationally. So here I am going on and on about all the improvisational opportunities that exist for us every day, all well and good. The reason you can do your improvisational life the way you do it is because you've been doing it since birth. So how do you take what you already know how to do and move it into situations which we have categorized as more, if you will, formal improvisational situations? And what is the difference? Why do we choke up when we have to think of something on the spot? When we're at a party and we wish we had said something and we think of it later, you're in a job interview and you don't know what to say. You fancy somebody and you would like to ask them out on a date. If you're doing it online, it's a little easier because you can think it through and send the message. If you happen to be face-to-face, it's a little more challenging for most people. Why? That's an improvisational situation that often bogs down, and we've all experienced it somewhere along the way. So why the resistance? Well, you ask somebody for a date, the stakes are reasonably high emotionally. Maybe they say yes, maybe they say no. If you would like for them to say yes, and for whatever reasons they say no, you've run an emotional risk. There you stand, all alone. No has been issued. No date's going to happen. Disappointment ensues. Same thing with a job interview. If you don't get the job, disappointment. Same thing at a party. What am I going to say? Am I a wallflower? I've always been a wallflower. Here I stand, nothing to say. Or you just get tongue-tied and You can't think of anything. So let's go over some possible improvisational opportunities that can help you feel more comfortable in some of these situations. So here's an unexpected improvisational tip you can use right away. The silent space. For years, when I thought about improvisational work, I thought about what I was going to say, how I would say it, the spontaneous stuff that would come out of my mouth. It took a while for me to understand there's more to improvisational responses than saying something. Again, the silent space works very well. And in many ways, it takes a little bit more resolve to do a silent space improv than it does to actually say something. And the reason why I say that is because saying something right away is what most people expect. If you choose to hold silence or let silence hold you for a few moments or even for a longer period of time, 15 seconds, you'd be surprised at how that reconfigures the whole environment. Now, if you're in a job interview, you probably want to avoid the 15-second pause. That said, if you're in a job interview and you pause for a moment, even if you have no idea what you're going to say next, the pause will indicate thoughtfulness. It will indicate certainty on your part. It will indicate certainly confidence and a coolness, an ease about you. You're not in a hurry. And the person interviewing you will be relieved because other people that have been coming through on the day's interview maybe aren't as easy as you are. So you give the person asking you the questions a sense of peace, a sense of ease, a sense of confidence as well. So it goes back and forth between the two of you. So that silent space does a whole lot more heavy lifting than you might first expect. It takes a bit of practice to get the timing right, but once you learn how to do it, it can be very effective. And it also has the primary benefit of allowing you to relax into the situation. And sure enough, when you relax, that's when the good improvisational stuff bubbles up from inside of you. You think of things to say you wouldn't have thought of if you'd been a little bit more of in a hurry. And also, hurry creates a sense of nervousness when pacing and using silence accomplishes the exact opposite. It creates a sense of ease. And like I said, it works exactly the same way with the person you're talking to. The person interviewing you needs time to process the information as well. The person interviewing you also is working with high stakes. They have a job to fill. They're interviewing people to fill it. They have to make the right decision. So when you give them space to relax, it allows them to calibrate their process as well. So it's not a one-way street here. It's a two-way street. And by offering the improvisational silence, you give them the gift of the silence as well. They have time to relax into their thinking. They may not notice that you've done it, at least on the surface, but underneath they will have an emotional connection with that silence. And as a result, it'll be a positive emotional connection with you because you've given them something that they needed, just like you've allowed yourself the room and the space to fill the need of collecting your thoughts for the next beat. The eternal now sits right in front of you or right between the two of you. So here's something else to think about when you think about how you approach all of the improvisational opportunities in front of you. So the decision to hold silence for a few seconds or longer was an improvisational decision. You didn't know it was going to happen until you made the decision to hold that silence, until it happened. So the decision to hold silence is part of a strategic response as it is an improvisational response. So much of what we call improvisation, that spontaneous, off the cuff, never thought of it before, oh my God, how much he's channeling or she's channeling the universal flow of the spirit world. And you can go on and on with a million different metaphors. All of them may be legitimate, There's certainly some argument to be made for the electrical grids that exist on the Earth, all of the networks floating around through us, above us, below us, every preposition you can think of. So there's really some possibilities that we could plug into more than just us, and that flows through. There's no way really to filter it. What you do know is when you are responding in the moment, you're doing something you've never done before, like I am doing it right now. I am looking out on the blue sky, a bit smoke smudged from the fires in New Mexico. Luna the dog is on the carpet in front of me. My blue water bottle shadows itself over Luna. There are a few birds outside. The interior has no sun coming down. I'm shaded. I'm sitting on a couch. All of this is something I'd never done before. I just gave it to you. Would you say I improv the moment? Or would you say that I was willing to trust my creative organizational sensibilities to report on what was right in front of me, ordering my observations, 1, 2, 3, 4, mathematically, really, ordering those observations in a way that ended up making narrative sense to your imaginative acceptance? So consider this. Improvisation is about being spontaneous. It is indeed about responding in the moment, creating a narrative from the moment, especially when you're on stage doing the improvisational work, songs, poetry, or improv topics in an improv troupe, responding right away. The first impression with someone sitting in the audience is those people on the stage, or that person on the stage, is giving this no thought at all. It's just flowing out, like I said, coming from some other source. Let's consider this. Just like with the silence is an improvisational opportunity, realizing that what's going to come out in those moments in public, or maybe not, in between two people, it's more about trusting your ability to organize things in a fast way, rather than these things coming from nowhere, spontaneously, out of nothing, and organizing themselves in a way that registers with the person or the people in front of you. Let's take one of the most dramatic improvisational situations that we all understand if we have a driver's license and if we drive. Now, if you live in New York City and you don't have a driver's license and you get around by way of cars, taxis, Uber, transportation like that, or the subway, that presents a very different improvisational opportunity that requires the same amount of skill. Staying with driving, because that's what most people do, and you probably have your driver's license, and you probably remember the first time you got your driver's license and you first hit the road. How easy was it when you first started to learn how to drive? Did you think of your driving skill development as an improvisational workout? Or did you go to driving school and learn when to stop at the stop sign, when to turn left, when to turn right, what all the signs meant, what the laws were, what the rules of the road were? You probably focus more on that than the fact that driving is one of the most complicated improvisational situations that you can be in. You never know what's going to happen. Think of when the rabbit runs across the road or the squirrel runs across the road. How many times have you been driving down a two-lane road and had that happen to you? What did you do and how did you respond? Or flip it, it's a four-lane interstate and there's a turtle crossing the four-lane and you're coming into Western North Carolina through the Pigeon River Gorge and there sits the turtle right in the middle of the road and every car is going 55 miles an hour and above. Both the squirrel and the rabbit darting across the two-lane and the turtle plodding across the four-lane. Improvisational situations that you didn't expect. How do you deal with them, and what do you do? The improvisational problem with the turtle on the four lane is there's not much you can do except hope the turtle makes it across and hope that everybody that zips along somehow misses the turtle on its journey to the other side. You know the odds the turtle has are not that great. And your improvisational move is relatively small. All you have to do is register the turtle, move to the right or to the left, miss the turtle, and go on. The turtle's improvisational opportunities are much more limited. Its only choice is to put one sad foot in front of the other and hope it makes it across the road. Actually, there's almost nothing improvisational about that. Just keep moving. Not to mention, the turtle has no concept of what it means to drive a car. All the turtle has a concept of is what it means to get across the road. Lots of different variables play out in life. Same thing with the job interview or asking for a date or any of the other things that you have when you're encountering people. All kinds of different variables are at play when it comes to people interacting with each other. So it might be fair to say that improvisational work may just be limited to humans. Maybe the rabbit and squirrel running across the road don't think of it as an improvisational opportunity, and yet it actually is something the squirrel and the rabbit have to make calculations around. So you probably have had a squirrel run across the road in front of you, or a cat, or a rabbit, or some other animal, a fox maybe, middle of the night. I've had a few of those in my life. That's an improvisational situation if there ever was one, because instantly you have to decide what you're going to do to avoid missing the animal running across the road. I don't want to hit the squirrel, the fox, the dog, the cat, whatever's running across the road. I would love to miss the animal. Sometimes that hasn't happened. Sometimes, sadly, my wheel and the squirrel connected and the squirrel didn't make it. There's also the improvisational move of trying to miss the squirrel by slowing down or swerving. Sometimes people will try to miss the squirrel. They slow down, they swerve, and off the road they go. The squirrel goes on its merry way, climbs a tree, and that's that for the squirrel. But there you are in the ditch. So what I have discovered, and you may have discovered this too, when I'm driving down a country road, which is where you usually have the squirrels, the rabbits, the dogs, the cats, the foxes, or whatever it is darting across the road, I'm generally going fairly slow, keeping a steady speed. Out of the corner of my eye, I see the movement, the little animal getting ready to cross the road. The intuitive thing to do is to slow down or change your direction or do something quick that will avoid hitting the animal. Whenever I have done this, I've often hit the squirrel. Somehow, when I change my trajectory, somehow when I change my speed, the squirrel gets confused because, lo and behold, even though the squirrel is not doing the improvisational moves that I might be doing, the squirrel is doing some serious calculation. The squirrel, let's just use the squirrel, not the rabbit or the fox, the squirrel. The squirrel is crossing the road. The squirrel spots the movement, which is the car. The squirrel doesn't know it's a car. All the squirrel knows is its movement. And the squirrel has calculated its speed based on the movement of the car. So the squirrel is running at a rate that will likely get the squirrel beyond the danger the car offers. If I slow down, change my trajectory, brake, or any other kind of sudden movement, the squirrel also recalibrates and tries to figure out how to work the new organization into its already calibrated movement forward. And when the squirrel does that, and I do it at the same time, the squirrel darts in a different direction, and that's when the squirrel hits the wheel or the wheel hits the squirrel. Funny enough, me trying to avoid the accident creates the accident with the squirrel, whereas if I just slow very easy by just taking my foot off the gas and letting the car drift a little bit, the squirrel has time to make the calculations, and somehow, even if the squirrel ends up under the car, the squirrel still is able to calculate with speed how to miss the wheel that's coming towards it. It's not always a guarantee, but it is a mathematical equation that requires a great deal of calculation on your part and the squirrel's part, or my part and the squirrel's part. So to build this strategy out a little bit more around improvisation, there are four parts to the improvisational scenario that I use. You may have a different approach. These are my elements that I use when I'm moving through the day, improvising these moments, and also when I'm in a more formal improvisational situation, like on stage when somebody gives me a topic and I have to just, off of the seemingly top of my little head, come up with something that appears to the audience to be spontaneous. Either way, here are the four things that I use in order to make it happen. And I'm consciously using these. That said, I've been using them for so long that I have acquired what's called unconscious competence. I'm just not conscious of using them anymore. And yet, I'm looping through these four elements all the time. What are they? Here they are. The first element is narrative. Second element is agency. Third is voice. And the fourth is the outcome or the benefit, ease. So let's start with number one, narrative. The narrative of your life, whether you like it or not, your story is unfolding beat by beat, and you're responding to each beat. So within the context of the improvisational thinking, the narrative is always going on. Back to the squirrel and the car. My narrative is I'm driving down a country road. My headlights are on because it's twilight. The squirrel runs out in front, and I have to make some kind of decisions. Switch that to the job interview. It's the middle of the day. The narrative is you need a job. The person interviewing you needs to hire somebody. So you already have a dramatic opportunity here, an improvisational opportunity. That's the narrative. What do you do within the context of the narrative? So here's what you do. You learn to trust your agency, your authority, the authorship of the story, your ability to have a sense of direction over your life. You are the storyteller. You are the one making your story. The agency is your ability to understand this and to know that you have every right to claim the territory that belongs to you and the story that you're living in the moment. Maybe you'll be telling it later, but you are living it and making decisions in the moment. And these decisions influence the outcome. Sometimes it works to your advantage, other times it doesn't. Regardless of which direction it goes, you're still working within the improvisational nature of your own organizational impulses. And when you start looking at it like that, and you realize that improvisation is not something that is beyond you, but it's something that is a part of who you are, then you're able to expand the areas in which you can fill out these responses, the areas where you can make your decisions, the areas where you cease to hesitate so much. You trust the agency you have, the authorship of the story that you are making or telling or creating in the moment of now. And when you realize you can do that, that that's part of your birthright, part of what you were born to do, then that's when your voice becomes deeper, richer, more confident, more able to express all of the who-ness of who you are that's built into you. Narrative, agency, and your voice all moving together in a way that cues you to relax. It's okay. Things will be fine. What you say and what you do will be harmonized with who you are. And it comes out in each moment. And that's life improvisation, my friends. That's why we are here on this earth. We make things. We invent. We create. We rearrange. We calculate. We move through things. We travel. We have our narrative, the who of who you are, our agency, embracing that who-ness. The voice, so unique. Your voice is yours, mine is mine. Those people who know us love to hear our voices because the voice is the music of who we are. And then when you're harmonizing all that, there's an ease to it, just like there's an ease to the breeze blowing through the air right now, the summer breeze blowing through the air. And the bee catches the wind, which carries it into the wisteria and beyond. So the bee's gone. Now what? Okay, we've worked a great deal around establishing how improvisationally we all are as human beings. And if you want to confirm that, just go to the post office and watch people open their boxes and shuffle through their mail. Go to the gas station and watch people fill up their gas tank. Watch what you do. Watch what other people do. You'll see all that improvisational work at play. So how do you take that natural ability and keep turning it into all kinds of ways that you can apply it in the moment and do it consciously? So here's where the clumsiness of improvisational work can come into focus. And what I mean by the clumsiness is, if you want to practice this, it's really good to practice doing verbal improvisational stuff that seems to make no sense at all to you. Now, here's why, because your imagination will always make sense of it. I do this work a lot in the imaginative storm approaches that I take when I'm coaching people with their writing, when I'm coaching people around strategic planning, around what they're going to do next, when I'm working with someone who wants to do something very specific, like plan a festival or plan an event. And I most especially work with people every Saturday on our Imaginative Storm writing circle call on Zoom. People respond spontaneously, improvisationally to a photo, or sometimes a sound, or a song, and then they write words down, and then they use those words to do a little improv writing, and they come up with something. It always seems to fall together. And I think the biggest problem that people have, they just don't want to sound stupid or look foolish, so they hold back. And let me tell you, when you get in front of a group of people, those sensibilities really come into the foreground. I'm in front of 300 people. Somebody has just given me an improv topic, and I don't know what to do with it. Oh, my God, I'm going to look like the biggest buffoon that I've ever looked. Oh, and then you panic and then shrink and then you stumble around and then you really look a little goofy. Some people think, gosh, that's a boneheaded thing he said. Now, they all do it in good fun and they're not judging you viciously. And if you play your stumbling, folks will judge you quite favorably, something people don't realize. So how do you practice such a thing? Well, you've heard me do it a few times while I've been recording. I just improvised or practiced the room, including Luna, still sleeping. Luna's nearly 10,000 years old. I can't believe Luna's still alive, but she's tottering around. She's actually only about 13, but still tottering a bit. She's an old lady Luna, tottering around outside on the gravel drive. So how do you do this? So I'll give you three things you can do to improve your improvisational chops. First thing, very easy, recalibrate the way you pay attention to what you're already doing. So when you are driving down the road, think of the drive as an improvisational exercise rather than a drive. When you meet somebody that you've known a long time, think of what you're doing as an improvisational interaction. If you live in a household of many generations, maybe three, notice how all of the improvisational layers play out. So that's one thing you can do. The second thing you can do is to practice this on your own privately. And one of the best ways to do it, and I know this might sound a little off-putting and you might not want to try it, but I encourage you to try it. You have maybe a book or two around the house. Maybe you have a whole shelf full of books. So go choose one book off the shelf The book I have chosen to work with right now is Edna O'Brien's book, House of Splendid Isolation. I just arbitrarily pulled it off the shelf, and I'm holding it in my hand. A book that's been published and is on the shelf has some improvisational energy around it, but it is a finished product. It's something that's organized, it's engineered, it's between the covers, it has pages, it has its own story it's telling. Talk about narrative, agency, voice, and ease. Once you finish with a book and it's all well done and presented, the package is over. You've got all the improvisational work there, but you also have all the organization, and it arrives in a form that you can read. But this is not what we're going to do with the book that you've chosen from the shelf or the one that I've chosen. What you do to improve your improvisational skills out on the street, talking to the officer when you've just been pulled over for a possible speeding ticket and you want to get out of it, you have to not think fast as much as allow the speed of your improvisational nature to have its full authority, its full form. So one of the ways to practice that is to pick a book and then flip through the pages and just read the verbiage that pops out as you're flipping through and make up a story. So I'm going to do that right now. I'm holding the book. It's a beautiful cover. It's mostly white, lots of breathing room, House of Splendid Isolation. So I'm going to open it and I'm going to start flipping through the pages, and I will create something improvisational. This is the kind of prep work you can do to keep your mind sharp, clear, and your tongue untied. The only thing of beauty that emptied out when I studied the pounding of the nature that is being new just before me are the hooks that sit inside this adoring, marrying game I've been playing for the last fierce number of house party years in the pigsty that was once belonging to the aware person that lived in the dry words outside the neither does his wife's voice cave in the cold impersonal moments when the cars swung around and came back and back and back. And Ned said, "This is too soon. I'm not Jesus anymore. I'm just producing an identity that will allow me to drink alone. And I know it's harmless. It's harmless, and the hot water does not know why the Pope keeps sending me messages. All those evil men, God knows, I used to visit them all the time, and now all I do is lean against the country and cut my hair because the dying light tells me that shadows will fall somewhere within the room." As you listen to that, it made imaginative sense. If you put it on paper, you might find one or two phrases in there that you could use in a writing exercise. The point isn't whether it makes sense. The point isn't if it's something that you can use tomorrow. The point is you allow yourself the opportunity to give your whole body a green light to just play around and make no sense. It's not about getting it right. It's about rearranging things so that you become more and more aware of how to organize what is always the unexpected, which is the now. Time present, the only thing we have, the eternal now. And as we get close to the end of our time together, I'd like to cover one last thing that you can do to improve your improvisational chops: the physical. We've done the verbal. I just did that. We talked about the silence, talking about the physical as well. Each move you make with your body is an improvisational move. You don't know when you're going to do it. You don't know what you will point to. You don't know how your arm will go. You just know it will go. So if you really, really, really want to improve your on-the-ground daily improvisational chops and also increase your audience appearance chops, if you're so inclined, be foolish with your body. If you do yoga or if you're athletic in some other way, you know how important it is for your body to swirl around. Now, a good example of that right now, the World Cup is being played out. The finals are coming up. When you watch those players run across that World Cup pitch, you see them moving their bodies in a most improvisational beauty. They never know what's going to happen next. And yet when the ball comes to them, they capture it with their foot as if the ball grew out of their foot. This is because they are fully engaged physically all across the spectrum. And in fact, in European football or soccer, depending on how you name it, there's very little said, a few shouts here and there, but mostly it's all physical improv, and someone wins and someone loses. So when you work with this, work with your body, work with holding silence, work with the foolish verbiage that can come out that makes no sense. And as you do this, you will actually be cueing your body, your creative faculties, your narrative, your agency, your voice, your ease to engage, to be able to handle the stuff that comes forward to you, the stuff that confronts you. You will see things that you didn't see otherwise because your vision will be more spread out. Your imaginative intelligence will be more excited. It will be more engaged. It'll be tingling more. Your creative side will be marrying with your rational mind side, and something will be happening. And that something that's happening will give you opportunities to present yourself to the world in ways that you maybe haven't done before. But you've got to be foolish. You've got to be childlike. I'm not a big fan of adults saying, I'm never going to grow up. I'm always going to be a child. I'm going, that's impossible. You can't be a child forever, but you can play. And when you play, you call up your mature childlike sensibilities. And that's another kind of childness, if you will, that can really benefit you. So when you do your improvisational playing, play with the things around you. Play with your body. Let it move and flow and be free. Let it have its moments. And if you play with other people, you can do that as well. And then one last little tip that you can do, this is something I've done many, many times. It's called the jump. If you like working with other people, and I encourage you to work with other people improvisationally, get together and be foolish, play a bit. Write down maybe 5 lines of dialogue like, oh, I've just lost your keys, or what happened to the dog? He didn't come back last night. Or why did you fry the egg like you fried the egg? Whatever the dialogue is. Put the little strips of paper with the dialogue written on it in a hat or a box or on the table, and then have one person pick one line of dialogue and say it to the other person. Like, you didn't serve my eggs the way I like them. And the other person will respond, well, I didn't serve the eggs the way you like them because I don't remember how you like them. I haven't seen you in 100 years. Well, it doesn't matter. I still want my eggs the way I've always wanted them. So the people go back and forth between this dialogue thing. Sometimes it completely bombs. Other times it catches on fire and takes you in directions that you've never ever imagined you would go in. And the more you practice your improvisational chops, the easier things will be for you. Things will become a bit more amusing to you. You will maybe increase your sense of humor. You will become more comfortable with just being a little foolish, having a little playful nature. And if you're one of those serious types that thinks all this is a complete bit of rubbish, I encourage you to relax a little bit. And reconsider that. Maybe it's not rubbish. Let the wind blow across your toes. Let the sky be blue. Let the smoke be smoky. And you be in the middle of it all. Let be finale of seem. It's not that it seems a certain way. It just is. And you are living right in the middle of that eternal now. And you can play it any way you want. Shuffle that deck and deal those cards and see what falls on the table. And then you decide what happens next. Narrative, agency, voice, and ease. So that brings me easy around to the end of our time together. Thank you ever so much for tuning in. I will be having other guests on the show, but I have to say I do enjoy these kinds of explorations. I hope you've enjoyed it too. If you did get something out of it, I would love to hear about it. Nave@jamesnave.com. Am I crazy for doing these solo shows on community radio? I don't think I am. I love the improv of it. I love the connections of it that happen inside of me and hopefully inside of you as well. Nave@jamesnave.com. I'd like to hear what you think about all of this. So there it is. Brings us around to the close. Thank you ever so much for listening to Twice 5 Miles Radio. I really do appreciate it. Sometimes I have conversations worth listening to, and other times I have conversations like this one with you and with me and with the whole world. I would like to thank Walter Parks for our theme song, walterparks.com, for more on Walter's music. I'd like to thank Devine Dial for managing WPVM-FM in Asheville, and Robin Collier for managing KCEI, Cultural Energy Radio, in Taos, New Mexico, broadcasting up in Alamosa, Colorado. Twice 5 Miles Radio is also on all of the streaming platforms under the name, you guessed it, Twice 5 Miles Radio. And finally, if you do love to write and you would like to join our improvisational Zoom writing community gathering every Saturday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we'd love to have you. It's improvisational, that's for sure. Conversations are good. The writing is interesting. It only lasts an hour and a little bit more if you want to hang around for the conversation. That's pretty much it. We have a good time. You can find the Zoom link at imaginativestorm.com, imaginativestorm.com. So that's it for now. Thank you ever so much for spending this time with me, and I do hope you come back sometime soon. And until then, maybe, if I am lucky, I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
Mana Food Bank, located in Mills River, North Carolina, is a not-for-profit service organization working to end food insecurity in 6 counties in western North Carolina. During Hurricane Helene, Mana suffered total devastation to its distribution center and headquarters. With the help of sponsors, donors, and volunteers, Mana has continued to try and meet the food needs of families and individuals in our community. They are now restarting their regular distribution operations to over 225 partner agencies. If you or someone you know is in need of food and supplies, or you would like to find out how you can help, on the web you can go to manafoodbank.org/Helene or call the food helpline at 828-290-9749. That's 828-290-9749.
Sunrise, with tears standing in my eyes. And I had the blues before sunrise, with tears standing in my eyes. It's such a miserable feeling, a feeling I do despise. Everybody's down on me. Seems like everybody, ooh, everybody's down on me. I'm gonna cast my troubles down in the deep blue sea. Today has been such a long or lonesome day. Today has been a long or lonesome day. I've been sitting here thinking